I'm Kevin Sanders, and this is A Little Day Music. Welcome in. You know, occasionally on Friday afternoons, we like to take the time to talk to those who are active in the cultural arts community in the area, and this afternoon will be no exception. So, who do we have in the studio with us today?
I'm Peter Leonard. I'm principal conductor and interim artistic director of Opera on the James in Lynchburg, Virginia.
I want you to tell us about you.
Well, I'm a conductor. I have worked in Germany for the last 20 years full-time.
So hat in Deutschland to... gearbeitet?
Ja, sehr gerne. Hab viel Glück gehabt. I had a lot of good fortune there.
Ausgezeichnet.
But I'm from Boston. I studied at Juilliard, and my first positions up till I was in my early 40s were in the United States, mostly with symphony orchestras. I have a lot of experience as a symphony orchestra conductor. And I went to Germany. There are lots of wonderful opportunities, but I went especially because there's a lot of more opera opportunities. In the United States, you can tend to get typed as either a symphony orchestra conductor or an opera conductor.
Really?
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. And in other countries, certainly in Europe, they don't make any difference between the two. The fascinating thing about the work there, of course, is that it's very heavily state-funded. So it's possible to do more risk-taking and just plain more expensive works, also in much smaller cities than you can in the United States. So I had amassed a pretty large, quite a large symphonic repertoire and a decent opera repertoire, but it lacked some of the works that I'd always dreamed of doing, by Wagner, by Strauss, the big behemoths like Lohengrin or The Ring of the Nibelung.
Do you find, or I'm sure you do find, but can you tell us some of the difference between a European audience and an American audience in an opera setting?
It depends on the country.
Really?
Yeah. Northern European audiences tend to be less fidgety and noisy in the pauses. One generalization I can give you, and this is a change, seems to me, over the last couple of decades, the Americans don't clap very long anymore. And they tend to stand up immediately. Even on Broadway in New York, virtually every performance ends with a standing ovation. When I was younger, a standing ovation was very unusual, and it was a special sign that something was considered particularly fine. And now it's almost automatic that the American audiences stand up at every performance. They applaud enthusiastically, but very briefly. In Europe, they applaud much longer, and they do not stand up unless, it's been a really extraordinary event.
And that's something you've seen change over the past generation or so?
I mean, at the Met, the Metropolitan Opera, people still applaud pretty much as long as they used to. But just about everywhere else I've been, and just about any other theater, whether it's in a big city or in the regional, up they go on their feet. They applaud for, one curtain call, so to speak, and then it's over. I think it's very sad. And I don't really know why it has happened that way.
Now, you've got, you're talking about the European experience and a bit about the American experience. So tell us about, how did you land at Opera on the James? How did this come about?
I have still a few friends and acquaintances, colleagues back in this country. And the former general director, Cecilia Schieve, was the in a former position. She worked with the Florida Grand Opera in Miami, Fort Lauderdale. And I guest conducted there and was also there as doing master class and coach and so on when she was running that program. So we knew each other from, years back. When I got back to town, back to the United States, I've ended up in Knoxville, Tennessee, because my wife, Lorraine DeSimone, is a mezzo-soprano who has been on the faculty of the School of Music at UT for the last 14 years. We actually lived on two continents for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which I don't recommend. That's one of the reasons that I ceased my full-time commitments in Germany, that we'd had enough of that. And so Knoxville's kind of like down the street. And so I was in touch with Celia, and she was kind enough to ask me to come and do a production 3 years ago. And I guess it worked out, because I'm now the principal conductor of all the larger main stage productions.
So what is coming up? What's our next production for Opera on James?
We have a fantastic project that is very unique and really exciting. It's in effect a spotlight on American opera.
Ah.
American opera. You know, people think opera is Carmen, you know, the sexy mezzo gypsy, or Traviata, which we are doing later on in this season with the beautiful tragic death of a courtesan in mid-19th century Paris. But the genre of opera is an old one. It's good 400 years old, and it is alive and well, and most interesting, particularly in the United States. There is a big appetite for new works of any kind. But in the opera world, I'm now over 60, I can look back to a time when the word opera was connected more or less, for most Americans, with the Metropolitan Opera Saturday broadcasts. Thank goodness the Met is still there, and they're broadcasting and also doing their HD productions in movie theaters. But the growth of regional opera in America has been phenomenal. There are more companies performing more performances to more audience members now than a few decades ago. Part of the mission, especially of smaller companies like ours, is to highlight younger talent, talent from this country, to give them a step, a springboard into their careers. Many companies, and certainly ours, have a program called Young Artist Program. The short word is YAP, Young Artist Program. These are young professional singers. They're already ready to work and fully trained, who spend anything from a few weeks to a whole season in a community bringing opera to the people. Of course, they sing also on the main stage under the big fancy curtain and everybody all dressed up. But their main mission really is to bridge the gap between stage and audience. And that means going to the audience. This activity, or this project that we have, a spotlight on American opera, is really a festival of some of the really fun, interesting modern operas that have been written within the past 50 years or so. Just a sampling. And they will be performed not in a large fancy theater, but in interesting spaces. We have actually three performances. One of them will actually be free at the Court Street Baptist Church in Lynchburg. And the other two, one will be played at the Timberlake United Methodist Church. They're all in the afternoon, they're good, easy time to get to. And of course, in a space that we have often performed in the past, the Warehouse Theater at the Academy Center of the Arts, right in downtown Lynchburg. But this is also what we in theater call a black box space. There's no curtain. If you're sitting in the front row, you're as close to the singers as you and I are to each other, just a couple few yards away. So you can see, not only hear great singing, but you can see great acting.
This the first performance of Opera in James, is this the season opener or what?
Yes, in effect, this is our first big major production. We've had We do a lot of community events and school visits.
Ah.
They aren't really open to the public. Visit to nursing homes, other social clubs, churches. This is our first major public performance where you can actually buy a ticket and go and see something, see and hear something special, something you haven't perhaps and hopefully ever encountered before.
Now, is this a large orchestra and company, or is this a what is that shaping up to be like?
These productions are in very intimate spaces, so the focus is on the singers themselves, of course, with their costumes and lighting and so on. But the accompaniment, these are the way these particular pieces are written. The accompaniment is piano.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. This is a genre that is also had a huge revival in the United States. When you know what I mean when I say chamber music. Chamber music is for a small number of instruments. It was born in people's living rooms. People who were well off in the past, their idea of leisure was to, and we're speaking of Central Europe, well, Europe in general, in the 17th and 17th, let's say, into the 18th and certainly the 19th century. The way you spent your evening in a cultured family was to make music together. Everyone played an instrument or sang. If they couldn't do either, they would read poetry and probably write it and read aloud. So people entertained each other in relatively small spaces. So chamber music and the genre of chamber music, string quartet being the best known, but not the only one, the only format, is something where individuals meet each other on a meta level of the international language of music. Chamber opera is similar. It's written for a small
chamber
space.
Chamber opera?
Yeah.
Wow, what a cool phrase. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, well, it's a genre that has had quite a rebirth in what we would call the modern era, the 20th century, and most especially in the United States. Why is this? There are a lot of factors. One factor is that many talented composers sprinkled all through the various parts of the United States did not have access to big stages and big orchestras like the Metropolitan Opera. And as university, especially state universities, but also private universities, as a center of not only learning but of culture have developed throughout the United States, as the music departments in all of these areas developed, there would be a local composer. Many people at first, and maybe even now, don't realize that they have a neighbor who is a composer. If there is a college or university with a music department in your town, you have neighbors who are composers, just like Beethoven was, a composer. We have I'm not sure if you play on your station, there's a public radio program about new music that they always, their slogan is, "Don't forget, at one time, all music was new."
Composer's
Daybook. The music of the past was at one time new.
Yes, we run that at noon and 4.
Oh, okay. So you know what I mean. So anyway, this genre of chamber music where you have not a big stage, but you have a very close relationship visually and orally to the performers is what we're highlighting with this program. And actually, in the Warehouse Theater, we're going to do it's probably the shortest opera ever written. It lasts barely 10 minutes. It's called A Hand of Bridge. And the four singers, the four characters, are sitting and literally at a bridge table and are playing A Hand of Bridge. The first line in the first lines in the opera are somebody saying, "Ace of Clubs," "Two of Hearts," or whatever. And the last word is the word that ends every round if somebody Trump's. Trump. Boom. It's a riot. What's fun about it, of course, is not the game itself. It's just a framework. But the singers are, as they're speaking their bids and making once in a while a comment to each other in normal conversation, we hear their thoughts as well. These are two married couples, and you immediately get the impression that this sort of routine of playing bridge is wearing thin with at least some of them. And we hear them thinking about things that they would never, never want anyone else to hear.
An operatic Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Well, in a sense, except in Albee, that especially after the vodka gets poured, then people start splattering everything all over the floor. In this piece, there is, of course, it's a drama. There has to be tension. There has to be resolution. But what's fun and funny and touching, also very touching about it, is that we hear very intimate thoughts set to music while the other two or the other three people at the table have no idea what the particular individual is thinking. And some of it is mildly racy. That work will not be performed in the churches. It's not that it's pornographic, but it's not really appropriate for a church setting, some of what we hear the card players thinking.
So what will we be hearing at this first performance?
Well, as I said, there will be several different chamber operas, the mm-hmm. Hand of Bridge at the Warehouse Theater. All of the venues will have another fun piece that is new to me when it was programmed. I don't know how many people know the folk song, I guess you'd call it, Sweet Betsy from Pike. Several friends of mine know it here in the South in Lynchburg and Virginia. I grew up in Boston. I never heard this song. But everybody, if you're interested in it, you can go to the that source. I'm not going to give them an ad. They don't need it on the internet. And listen to, I like the recording. There's a Johnny Cash recording of the song. Also Burl Ives, for some of the older people in the audience might remember Burl Ives, was also a wonderful actor. He plays Big Daddy in the movie version of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. At any rate, it's a ballad. It's a story. And this opera is for really brilliant singing actors, because they don't, how shall I describe it? They sit on stools and tell us a story. They live a story with other characters that these singing actors have to create for us. The story of Sweet Betsy from Pike, I won't take time to describe it, but the opera is not a dramatization directly of the ballad. It takes the shape of the story and kind of twists it around to turn it into a comic romp. It's subtitled A Horse Opera.
Ah.
So maybe that'll give you some idea. It's in effect a riff on folksy music, and most of all on opera. It's a parody of the serious scenery chewing opera, with you can't see me, but take the Sarah Bernhardt position of, oh, I'm so miserable, and I'm going to sing about it for 20 minutes. And, of course, the classic is, I'm dying. And then they sing an aria for 10 minutes about whatever's concerning them. And then they boom, hit the ground. The orchestra plays a little interlude. And they come back and sing trills for 20 minutes. All of those sort of funny characteristics are, you know, they're ripe for parody. Not just this opera, actually, each one of the pieces that we're doing in Wyatt, one way or another, is a riff on the traditional idea, which is actually not true, but it's a cliche that opera is serious and sad, tragic, and stuffy.
But it's enjoyable.
I think opera is. I adore opera. Even that, you know, what's marvelous about this era in history is that we have access to so many different kinds of music, so many different kinds of styles within classical music itself. From the time, let's say, roughly the turn of the 19th to the 20th century, the idea of a uniform musical style that was sort of au courant for most people, for most listeners, very gradually, or actually rather rapidly, fell apart. So that's another fun thing about this program, excuse me, is that we have several different composers, more or less from the same, let's say, half century in the 20th century, with wildly different takes on what makes sense for them musically. We're doing excerpts, for instance, from Porgy and Bess by Gershwin. Best known song is probably Summertime, but this is music which, at the time, people were shocked to hear on an opera stage. George Gershwin, one of the greatest composers in our history, American history, was a pop, what today you'd be calling a pop composer. He was a jazz great, but the idea of letting someone like that into the concert hall was, and to some degree for some people, I think still is, a surprise.
As you said, I'm not going to dignify it, but you can go on the internet and you can find something called Pacific Overtures.
Yes.
By Stephen Sondheim.
Yes.
And probably listeners would be more familiar because of the Johnny Depp film that came out, Sweeney Todd. That was opera. It wasn't Broadway to me. That was opera. And of course, Stephen Sondheim has written so much stuff, but it's so opera-esque. And I use Sweeney Todd particularly because of the plot. And of course, it just builds up to this huge, gigantic tragedy at the end.
Yeah.
But it's something that I just, from the first note, I'm frozen until the end. I can't move. I'm riveted by the music and by the story.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I think human beings, it's natural that we're kind of label obsessed. The term I like the most for all of these genres, we have opera, we have operetta, we have musicals, we have an older version of Singspiel, was a German expression, is lyric theater. I like that expression, lyric theater. It means we're in a theater or a theatrical experience will be had, and music is an important factor in the event. To me, there's no good or bad, classical music, popular music. The labels don't apply. To me, it's not about whether it's classic or jazz or pop or rap or musicals or standards. And this isn't original with me. This is Duke Ellington. They asked him, what's the difference? What is this all about? He said, there's only two kinds of music. The good stuff, it's good to listen to, and the rest. If it's something that you enjoy hearing, that feeds you, That's your good music. And you're absolutely right. With a work like Sweeney Todd, or for that matter, the Andrew Lloyd Webber's pieces, you know, whether it's Jesus Christ Superstar from the past or still Phantom of the Opera, still playing on Broadway, it's hard to say, is this really musical or is it opera? I mean, who cares? Actually, in Germany, the genre of musical is... Classical musicals especially is very popular. My Fair Lady is one of the most performed musicals. It has nowadays the feel, to my ear, of operetta. Well, what's the difference between operetta and musicals? I don't want to be the one to define that. It's impossible, really. And the Germans, the system there, if you, as the theater that I ran in my last position, we performed productions of opera, operetta, and musicals. And the department that produces all this, the genre, in effect, in German, is Music Theater, Musiktheater. And that encompasses any, you know, we did a staging of Tommy's The Who, and that was right on the same list, and respected and treated right next to a production of a Verdi opera.
In my opinion, as it should be.
Yeah, well, that's why I like the term lyric theater, or theater with music, or whatever, you know? What's sad about labels is that it scares some people away. You say opera, and immediately, for some reason, people get the idea that they need to own a tuxedo and one that fits. I have a couple that don't. But, you know, that you have to dress right, you have to behave right, that it's very expensive. These performances, as all our performances are for everybody. The price is very reasonable. The top and standard only price is $20 a seat. But we also have very generous group sale prices. And we have kind of an ad campaign going on that if you see a certain ad and quote the code on the ad, you get a 20% discount. So we hope that that will let people know, and maybe it's an important message, that Opera on the James belongs to everyone. You can order tickets online at operaonthejames.org, or you can just phone us up at 434-528-3397.
And this performance will be when?
We have three performances. As I said, the final one is free at the Court Street Baptist Church on November 11th. The first and the opening, the premiere, is on November 4th at the Warehouse Theater at the Canopy Center of the Arts right in downtown Lynchburg at 3 p.m. And it is only at that performance that we'll be performing the hand, A Hand of Bridge, the opera we were speaking about earlier about the two levels of reality, the card game and the inner thoughts of those playing. Sweet Betsy from Pike is also, and Trouble in Tahiti, excerpts from Porgy and Bess also on the program. For all three, the other performance is, in between those two, is on November 10th at Timberlake United Methodist Church, also at 3 p.m.
Peter Leonard, Principal Conductor of Opera on the James, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.